This is Lori Koppelman. Thank you for joining us for the Clutter Chronicles podcast, One Woman's Journey Through Stuff. This is a serial podcast about a recovering hoarder named Mary who lets me ask her anything I want about her struggle. She is honest and brave every single conversation. Mary is sharing her story in the hope that it will help others. So please help us get the word out. As we all know, nothing beats a personal recommendation. You can also support our efforts by becoming a patron of the show on a website called patreon.com. Once there, search for Clutter Chronicles and you can see the levels of support you can choose from. Here is a huge thank you to all of our patrons. Last time we talked, Mary told us about the death of a childhood friend that gave her a new perspective on her hoarding. In today's conversation, Mary talks about moving from the arena of hoarding to one of hope and explains how she's been making leaps in her healing from shame with the help of her therapist. Welcome back, Mary.
Thank you.
It's fun having you back here. It's been about a little over a month. We talked last time about waiting a month or more until our next time we talk. And here it is. Time flies.
Yes.
And it's fun to have you here again. So thanks for coming.
Thank you.
So I just saw you shuffling a bunch of papers as we were getting ready to talk. And I just thought I would be curious. How do you figure out what you're going to share with us and what you're not? Or is it just random? I mean, I know I ask you questions, but I'm just a little curious about your process before we get started.
Well, it's kind of like if I know we're going to get together, I will kind of in my mind think, what is it that I've been doing? What have I been working on? And what's been my struggles, whatever? And I kind of try to keep a list, and I lose a list. And then I recreate the list, or I have more to add to it, and I can't add it. And then often when I'm driving here, it just flows. And I'll be driving and I take notes. I write while I'm driving. I don't look at what I'm writing. So often the word is on top of itself. So then I don't know what the word really was. And I've lost that little nugget. But when you text me recently asking if we could get together, I was like really on to something, and I'm like, okay, ask me about that, and that's kind of all connected. But generally I don't really know what we're going to talk about, and I'm always surprised of what I talk about. So it's in there, but it's kind of in the soup.
So you said there's a nugget. Well, maybe we should start there.
Okay. All right. So we've talked about Brené Brown, and I actually haven't listened to her in quite a while, just because life got busy, and then I also had, I think it was a 6-CD set of one of her, it's like a course that she taught, which is what really opened my eyes to how we view ourselves in the world. And how that can either make us or break us. And she talks about the shame culture that we live in. And at that time was when I was taking any old job just to have a job. And I started working as a waitress. And I'm a terrible waitress. And I knew I would be. And I think prior to listening to her, I would have said I'm a terrible person because I'm a terrible waitress. And since listening to her, I realized it's just not my skill, and that's okay. And she talks about arenas, and it's funny because it's like she's in the back of my mind at times, and then it'll morph into my own ideas, but I think she would approve. So this is not a Brené Brown per se idea, but it's launched by her. So she talks about who's in your arena and who's in the good seats, who's in the nosebleed seats, and who's giving you grief who's supporting you, that kind of thing. Well, I've been thinking of ARENA more in the case of, think of like you go to the state fair and in this little arena there's a dog show. And in that little arena there's a horse show. And over here is this group doing that. You know, kind of like separate events going on, but only in our head. And what I mean by that, and I don't know if I've ever really explained this out loud, is let's say you wake up on a day where you know you are back-to-back tasks, and you know that it starts at 8 and it's going to go all day long, and you have to look presentable, you have to be an adult, you set the tone, you get ready, you are prepared for it, and you go out that way. Well, the next day, let's say you're planning to work on the garage or in the yard, you have a different thought process. It's more relaxed. It doesn't matter what you look like. You can just stretch and go outside and start working. Those are the arenas I'm talking about. So when you get up in the morning and you know you have a busy day that's high functioning, you have to get your mindset for that. And we think of things of like moods or what am I trying to think? I don't know how I'm going to explain this, but I think I've talked about how there are certain clothes that I own that I would not be caught dead wearing at Jute, which is an Aveda salon.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an arena. So I'm realizing that part of the reason why I wasn't making progress in the past is because I was working in the arena of hoarding. I was working while being in that arena.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's changing in me is that my arenas are changing. I'm more involved in the community. So therefore, I don't relate to that arena anymore.
Hmm. That's cool.
Yes. And if you think in terms of, we think we have like, let's say a ladder that we climb up in the working world or in life. I would say arenas are spaces that we graduate to. And I've been recognizing this more and more. And a good example is when I take my dog for a walk in the morning, I really don't care what I look like because I'm in my neighborhood. I'm just taking her for a walk and coming home, taking a shower. That's the whole point of the walk. But if we take them for a walk in the afternoon, my husband likes to stop and have lunch. That changes everything. I have to look presentable. So I have these beer goggle ideas of things I will wear where I think everything looks great on me until I've entered that idea of I'm going to be out in public, which is what holds me back. So it's this fantasy world of things that I like that aren't realistic. And that has been the deciding or the bottleneck of this whole hoarding thing. If you think about it, everything I held on to was a fantasy. I wanted to have my own store. Well, then I had my store. Well, then I wanted to have a booth. Well, the booths are too expensive. Well, I'm going to make $1 million. You know, whatever these fantasies are.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're getting slapped into reality, you're put into a new arena. So a good example is the other day, hubby wanted to go for a walk, and I just know. He says, no, we won't go anywhere. It doesn't matter what you look like. He says this to me all the time. And then he'll turn and say, let's go to lunch. And then I feel guilty. You know, I'm hungry, and I look like hell, and I wish I could have taken care of myself, and then wouldn't every person have taken care of themselves? But he catches me off guard when I'm working out in the garage or whatever. he wants to be spontaneous, and I'm never prepared. And it's because I'm fragmented. I have all this thing, all these things going on. So I said, give me 10 minutes, and I'm going to go downstairs into that horrible, horrible closet of mine, which is actually a bedroom, and come up with something to wear that's warm and presentable. And I don't have anything. I really don't. And the only reason why I could recognize that is because I was in that arena of impending doom of people are going to see me. And I just thought about how we can change our arenas. So a good example would be back when I was, let's say when I was at my lowest point, despair. First of all, it's easy for me to talk about now because I'm not in despair. But when you're in despair, your arena is everything is dark. Everything is unattainable. There's no worth. There's no value. There's why bother? And you're in this arena of sludge where the world looks like your arena. You think the whole world is what box you're in. And how do you function? You can't. And it's kind of like I'm tapping into the idea that you can create the arena for yourself. And this is what people talk about willing things or visualizing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like when I've been spinning my wheels, it's because I'm still visualizing my hoarding arena. And if I can visualize the sunny, bright day, happy arena, everything that doesn't match up would be logically something to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm becoming more and more aware of how much our mindset is the key to everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been recognizing, and we've talked about this all through, but that I am my worst enemy and I am the creator of these problems and these bottlenecks. And so lately it's been, what if, Mary, your arena is you don't give a crap?
Mm-hmm.
What does that feel like? And what is that like? And I've been tossing things as if I'm in that arena of I don't give a crap. And it's freeing me. And I don't know how to express it anymore than I think I compartmentalize things already. So this is a natural breakthrough for me. But until I can solidify what I'm talking about, I think this is something we all live in.
Mm-hmm. Our own realities.
Our own realities. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to think, I've talked about my own reality forever, but thinking, okay, let me try it one more angle. There was a study done by those in Notre Dame, University of Notre Dame, about people, what happens, have you ever had the experience where you have a thought and you go downstairs to do whatever that thought is, and by the time you get down there, you've forgotten what it is?
Oh, sure.
You can come back and come back to where you had the original thought and it'll come back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about that as, the word's not seen, I can't think of the word, thresholds.
Hmm.
That when you cross the threshold in your brain, you're crossing a threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like you're crossing from one compartment to another. And when they did this study and they were looking at it, to tell you the truth, I haven't had a chance to find the study. I just heard about it. I'm like, that's brilliant, because it explains how our brains work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of better than I'm going to will myself to change. Where do you start? And I'm going to will myself to throw this out. Well, I'm the problem. So unless I'm all in, which is the whole problem in its first place, how, mm-hmm. where are you going to get anywhere?
Mm-hmm.
But if you can change your mindset and say, I'm stepping into this arena where this stuff doesn't matter or this is more important,
mm-hmm.
it's like Alice in Wonderland walking into a new world. It's completely radical.
Mm. And what does that world look like? Do you have glimpses?
Yes. And that, I think this is what I have been experiencing for the last 3 months without mm-hmm. really understanding what it is. And I've been able to finally put it into words and mm. actually recognize it as a concept and then actually put it into action.
Mm. That's a lot.
Yes. And it's funny because I've been kind of doing this without knowing what it is, but now you know what it is, kind of gives you more power,
mm-hmm.
more control. And I would say that every time I would set things into my husband's truck with the idea it needs to go, okay, if I didn't have the problem of the snag of where does it go, this stuff would have been gone a long time ago. But that's what caused the hoarding in the first place, right? So that's the ongoing bottleneck. But one way to cross from my arena to that hopeful arena is to take whatever I don't want and put it in his truck. All this time, that's what I've been doing. I've been crossing over that threshold of, wait, maybe you need that, to decision that I can trust. Once it's in that truck, I've already made that decision. I don't need to think about it anymore. And I've been doing that lately in my car as well. So I boxed up a whole bunch of stuff to go to Goodwill and also to this other recycle place. And it can't leave the car until it gets to those places. And it takes me maybe a day or so because I'm maybe not driving in that area. But it's been such a freeing feeling. And then I feel like I slayed the dragon,
mm-hmm.
and it's gone. And I found some things that I had boxed up that had come out of the truck and back into the garage. And in many ways, it was like, well, I already know it's going because it was already given that freedom to go. It's crossed that threshold. And I would say the biggest fight I have right now is I am sorting out drops of water while I'm in the ocean still.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I can find ways where I can set those buckets of water separate from the ocean, they're getting out faster. And I just didn't realize what it was. I thought it was kind of like a ritual that I was doing, you know? Okay, well, somehow it's helping me to take stuff and put it in that truck that we don't drive. But then eventually he needs a truck, so it can't be there forever. So what my tactics have been is anything that is remotely going away ultimately goes in that truck, and then I take the things that are going to one group into my car from that truck, and then it goes when I go. And I'm taking it a little step further. I've had enough space in my house where now I can designate a spot where this is stuff that's going and it's not going to get remixed up, which a normal person would do, but I just haven't had that luxury.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I know what all this ritual is, game on. It's like I finally read the instructions on how to put that table together.
Mm-hmm.
Before it was just pieces, and now I know how they go together because I took the time to read the instructions, kind of thing.
So let me see if I've got this straight. So how to put the table together is decide that it's going. You're in the hopeful arena, and it's going to go, and it just needs to get into a vehicle because that's crossing a threshold out of hoarding
mm-hmm.
into hopeful, and mm-hmm. now it can go away.
Right.
And it's not transporting, but changing
it's not
positions.
Shuffling. Right. And I think that in a person who was less of a hoarder and more of a just kind of a pack rat or clutter, they would just set that in their garage and know this is the stuff designated. I can't trust that. There's too much still open. Too many cans of worms open. I wouldn't say I have a ton of stuff, but I got too many things going on. And then there's another breakthrough is when you play a game. I was trying to figure out what this game is, but it could be Monopoly or whatever, where you get to a certain point and then you draw a card and it sends you back to the start.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say I open up a box and I'm successful with 90% of it.
Go to jail. Go directly to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Yes.
Is that the one?
Yes. There are items that when I get, let's say 90% of it I have designated to go and the rest I don't, that goes to the start. That goes back to...
The 90% goes back?
No, the 90% goes to the truck. The other stuff goes to square one of sorting. So where does that go? It goes with the next group that I'm sorting, and it starts fresh. It's as if I never looked at it again.
Mm.
And the next group comes, and I go through it, and whatever's left, okay, fine. Because I'm going to play this game. If I can't make a decision and I'm stuck, I'm not going to be stuck going, well, see, I couldn't get the whole bin empty. But it's still questioned. It's still something that I haven't decided what to do with yet, which in an arena in the future will probably be, then that means it goes. But I'm not quite there yet.
So is this progress, this 90% going, 10% staying, you're saying that's a progress because in the past the 100% would have gone back because you couldn't get it 100% out?
Right.
Then it 100% stayed.
Right.
And now you're saying you can do 90% go, 10% stays, and 10% is back to square one.
Right.
And then you can put that into another round of decision making.
Right, because I think what it would do is I would open up a box and I'd see things I want mixed in with things I wouldn't, and I'd just go, oh, and I'd shut the box.
Right.
So now it's, what can you grab as fast as you can before you decide, you know? It's like a game of against myself. What can you eliminate in this box? And, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. Divide and conquer. But, I mean, I have been dividing and conquering. And in my list of papers, I went through areas that I had accomplished. Okay, so I went back as far as 2004. I would say 2004 was like the peak of my hoarding. About between 2004 and 2007, because then I opened up a store and then I exponentially
added.
And then I've had setbacks. Like I had helped this greenhouse business, and then I grabbed all their stuff because I was still a hoarder then. And then finally got rid of some of that. And then I helped my dad move. And then I took all our stuff from my house, my childhood house home. So there's these setbacks. But when I look at it in the big picture, I decided I had 28 total spaces between my house, my condo, storage, my friend's house, my husband's garage at one time that I worked with, and I am down to...
And on to 28?
Yes.
Places?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm talking about rooms and spaces, so that could be a bedroom.
Okay.
Now, my dad's house I counted as one space, but that could have been however many rooms, right?
Okay, gotcha.
But it all ended up in my garage, so that counts as a new space, even though it's the same redundant space. It's encapsulated as my dad's stuff. I am down to... how did I figure this out? 15 completed. 2 rooms that are functional. 7 that fluctuate. And 4 that I'm trying to clear.
That's pretty good.
28 that I was trying to clear.
Wow.
And in that light gave me so much hope. Because I'm kind of like where all the water drains at the end of the drain, and the water keeps coming. So I feel like I'm never, where's the end? but it's because the space that fluctuates is the space where I'm working. And that is not ever going to look good until the rest of the house is good. Or until I have one room completely empty and I could switch where my workroom is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I've been battling all this time because I never get to see any real progress unless somebody comes to the house and I have to stash everything and I'm like, oh, I don't have that much to stash.
Mm.
So
that's really not the measure you want
no,
right now.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the arena is changing.
That's the biggest difference, isn't it? To be in a hopeful one.
Yes.
A non-hoarding one.
Yes.
And see what that person does.
It's key.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how many times in the last 2 months where I'm like, seriously, standing next to myself going, who are you? And you cannot do this kind of transformation fast.
Mm-hmm.
You would freak out.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking about that, to not recognize yourself, even if you like what you're seeing, would be really scary,
mm-hmm.
I would think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we've all had flavors
right.
of that.
Right.
And then it's scary what that means.
When things were moving too fast was around the time we got our second dog. I think I told you about that.
Yep.
And now it's moving at a pace where I'm moving with it, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've even had to say to my husband, you're going to have to forgive me. I'm doing some major restructuring of myself. And it's kind of like restructuring a business. There's going to be people that are angry and...
Some fallout?
Some fallout.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
But with the intention of it being in a better place.
Right.
And
it makes it solid where this change is real.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no... way on earth. And here's, oh gosh, I almost forgot to say this about arenas. So let's say I'm in, so picture in your head your little bubble, what Mary's house looks like or whatever. And somebody steps into the house, they've stepped into my arena, changes everything. That's why someone next to you is so powerful, because their arena, their being changes your arena. It's like you can't not shift.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, well, it sheds light on the situation, makes you think better. It's bigger than that, because it forces you to shift in your head where you're operating from. And I would say that is exactly why someone who can sit side by side with someone while they're going through stuff, even if they're not saying anything, is so impactful.
Mm-hmm. Because I've experienced
yes,
it
yes.
over and over and over, and I know exactly what you mean, but I wonder why that's just the witnessing.
Because
it
just changes your arena.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like, I keep thinking in my mind, like a pen that is leaking on a piece of paper, it just spreads.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who walks in is the pen, and it just changes. It changes the air. It changes the feel. And what's really interesting is, yeah, you can say it sheds light on things, but suddenly your foolishness is known for what it is.
Mm.
Like the ridiculousness of your thoughts are clearer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the reason why that's hard for a hoarder is because they can't bear that.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much for them.
Mm-hmm.
So where it can be helpful to have somebody there, and it might be life-saving, it's also excruciating and can send you into despair.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these years where I've not let anyone in is because I'm avoiding that.
Right. What would you be able to, would you be able to let someone in now?
I think so. Certain people.
Mm-hmm. Sure, it matters who.
Yes.
I don't mean any random
someone
stranger.
Like you who knows what I'm dealing with. But there's still that fear of shame. And it's part of the whole thing. It's not the person's fault who walked into it. It's because the arena changes. Because, so the person steps into your house, they're in your space, the light is shined on your ridiculousness, therefore shame comes in. It's automatic. It's a knee-jerk reaction. And so if you can somehow swallow that, trust and let them take your hand kind of thing, trust that they're not judging, which how can they not judge? I mean, you're in your head, you're like, well, they must think I'm insane. And then that shuts you down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can't have progress. And not only that, it shuts you down for months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this odd thing where that is the actual answer, is to have somebody with you in it. Yet it's also the opposite of progress.
It's risky.
It's too risky.
Is shame combatible?
Yes.
What combats that?
This is really interesting. I'm going to link it with being humiliated. I still go to my therapist, which I don't know what I'd do without her. And I was telling her of experience I had where I was feeling humiliated. And I just felt like, if they only knew. And I couldn't talk about everything, and so I had to just hold it inside, and I just wanted to scream. I was just like, that's just not fair, and if only I could talk about this. And she says, oh, this is good. Okay, so we're going to work on this. I'm like, work on what? She's like, humility. Let's just experience humility. I'm like, oh, great. So she uses this technique where you close your eyes and you just feel it. You just feel what it's like to be humiliated. And you look like you're going to say something. I want to hear what you
say. I was just going
to
say, how did you get there? Was it conjure up a memory of something?
Right. So we could use that, or we could, what she typically does, because she thinks it's always linked to something where we first felt it, maybe as a child.
Okay.
So those are the, what happens when you feel these harsh feelings is think of like when you've got drunk on tequila, which I can never say the word. The next time you smell it, and you got drunk and sick, the next time you smell it, you're repulsed by it.
Right.
So in our minds, whatever we experienced as a child, knee-jerk reaction as an adult.
Right.
So she's taking care of what happened to us as a child so that we don't have the knee-jerk reaction. We can have a more stable, more logical response,
right,
more control over it.
Okay.
So she typically will take, when did this happen as a child? And just all you need is to just say a couple examples of what it is, and then what does it feel like?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just immerse yourself. I'm getting chills as I'm thinking about this. You just immerse yourself in that feeling. And then you let God come in, because, of course, God was there, which I've had a whole conversation with God, was, why don't you pull me out of that then? If you were there. That's a whole other story, whole other concept. And what happens is you get healed. Right there. So then once you've felt it all, because of course when I was telling her this story, I was already crying. I was already telling her about the most recent experience. And she taps into that. She's like, let's grab onto that.
Mm-hmm.
And then what she'll say is, so what do you feel? And I list all these feelings. I feel worthless. I feel ashamed. I feel unworthy, I feel useless. I mean, I can't think of all the things I said, but not good stuff. And then once you've been kind of sitting in there and then loved up, it's like your breathing changes and it's let go. And then she'll say, So do you still feel, and she'll list all the things I say. No, I don't. I honestly don't. It's a transformation within an hour.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
And what's amazing is within, I don't know, 2 weeks of me having that done, I went through a similar experience with the same people and it had no effect on me.
Wow. Wow.
And it's kind of like, I guess the only, I've used this word before, but it's restoring. It's mm-hmm. restorative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very significant.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've talked a lot about shame throughout this whole podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And for you to have just restored your self-worth, that seems like that's got to have multitudes of effect in
yes.
your life.
Unbelievable.
Okay, I kind of want to slap up these people. Two shaming, humiliating incidents in a couple of weeks, but, you know, people are just
they
being
just
people.
They just don't know.
Was it right. related to you and hoarding? Or, I mean, I don't need to...
Actually, it was part of that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this thing about society where they judge you on what you do. And if they don't value what you do, then where do you go? And I
just made a vulgar motion.
But it's kind of like you get to a point where you realize, why bother even bringing it up? Because I'm just going to get squelched even more. And it's a form of surrender, actually. And it, what's interesting is, in that, it's kind of like you rise above it later. Like once you've been that low and healed, you don't want to be low and then not ever recover from it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not get healed while it's happening. The next time you just are 10 steps over it, you know?
Right.
It you rise above it. It's like water off a duck's back. I don't know how to explain
it. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it so depends on you
mm-hmm.
or me.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same people
mm-hmm.
doing the same thing
mm-hmm.
they did, but how
right.
you are in
right.
that is the difference.
And one thing to note, what we tend to do is, let's say we went through something and we stuff it. It's never stuffed. It's always going to come out elsewhere. And we don't realize the impact on it. But once it's actually, I think of it as like acupuncture or something. If we can just tap into that feeling, just touch it, it kind of releases it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a muscle. And oh my gosh, I mean, shame, if there was, like, if I if I could only come up with one word that described hoarding and why someone hoards, I would say it's all encapsulated in shame.
Hmm. All.
Mm-hmm.
The root of it, the cause, root is the same thing as cause,
mm-hmm.
And what perpetuates it,
mm-hmm.
both.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And isn't that funny? Because it keeps you where it wants you. It's not a divine thing. And I keep, I got to say this. I feel like I'm talking too long. We know I have to cut this half.
Well, we'll
come to a stop.
Come to a stop and we can pick up. But yeah, finish this thought for sure.
I came out of this experience wondering, why would someone, because they're kind of poking the bear. They know that I, in the past, have always been pretty easygoing. Like, if I'm pretty, I would say majority of my life, I let people trample over me all my life. And people can sense that in me, right? So then they expect it. And then it almost perpetuates it. So when they were trampling over me...
We have a radar for that as humans. Who can I have power over?
Right.
And who's going to put
and
power
somehow
over,
it makes
on,
us,
over on me?
Right. Makes us feel good in some depraved way.
Yep.
So I was being... You know, the bear was being poked, and then I was responding, which was... This is the second time around. This is after I've been healed by the experience of dwelling in the humiliation. And so the second time around, when it was happening and it wasn't affecting me as much, I was actually fighting back. And the next day I thought about it and I thought, what on earth got into them to be poking the bear so much? Why were they like that? They've never been that bad before. It got worse. And then I thought about it. I'm like, the more I unload my stuff, the louder my voice. I've been buried for so long. And they're not expecting this.
You know, I just got chills. Yes.
Yeah. So whatever it is in our lives, it doesn't have to be stuff. We get buried. We allow whatever pains. I think that my hoarding is just an outward example of the pain I had inside.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, as I'm saying, to hell with that. This can go. I don't need that. It's not my problem. I'm not going to save the world. This can be in the trash. My voice is getting less muffled.
Mm-hmm. And you can say to people whatever it is mm-hmm. you want to say to defend yourself.
Right. And I feel like I'm, I guess the word was coming worthy, but that wasn't what I meant to say. But that's the only word I can think of at this second.
That word really resonates for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it
maybe
wasn't
I'm picking
your
it
word.
Up from you.
Yes, worthiness. Mm-hmm. Tap dancing for worthiness was one of Brené's quotes that she wanted to stop.
Yes,
tap
you're
dancing
right.
For
you're
worthiness.
Right. I forgot about
that.
That
just resonated so much with me, which is, well, of course, what I think of when I think of being presentable, like you wanting to have the right clothes on for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I do the same thing. I think a lot of women, probably a lot of people, do that same thing. Want to look a certain way in a certain arena because we're tap dancing for worthiness. Why does it matter?
Right.
At all.
So instead of changing, first of all, part of it is we think we can influence what other people think of us. We can't. But we can change our arena.
Mm-hmm.
And in my arena, if I say, I don't give a crap, hey, it gives you a lot more freedom.
And don't you respect that about other people when they
just
show up?
I've always wondered how they can do it.
Yeah.
In fact, the other day I was talking to someone who, oh my gosh, she was getting so much done. She was going to have a groom's dinner at her house and I was helping her. And I said to her, do you suffer from anxiety? I don't see any indication that you have any anxiety or even procrastination for that matter. She goes, I don't have time for that. Like, oh my gosh, that's incredible. And I thought about it later. I'm like, I like her arena.
Flipping the bird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, get that out. It's like nonsense to her.
Mm-hmm. I love that. This has been great, Mary, but we are talking a long time and I have more questions, so we will definitely keep going, but let's stop. Okay. On that high note for right now, I'm really thrilled what you've been experiencing this last month. So we'll talk again soon.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that ends today's Chronicle. I salute anyone who lives in the arena of I don't care. For those of us who struggle a lot or from time to time with that, may we be reminded that we do not need to tap dance for worthiness. Our voices are vital, even if we are the only ones who hear them. And we are our most important audience. Thanks so much to my brother Michael for sharing his gorgeous music. And thanks to you, our listeners, who are cheering Mary on. We love hearing from you. You can find us on Facebook, and I promise I will not clutter up your newsfeed. Stay tuned to find out what happens next on Clutter Chronicles.